But because they're both important, and because we're being introduced to them the first time, we'll take them separately. So in verses 13 to 16, he explains the relationship between the three doers, the supersoul, the modes, and us, the soul, the conditioned soul. This presentation that he makes it very clear that the dominant, indeed supreme influence in the life of a conditioned soul is Krishna, manifest as supersoul within the heart. Once one has heard this information from Krishna, it is natural that he would want to know more about this supersoul and the qualities and consciousness of one who's developed their relationship with him and has a realization of him. And so Krishna, in verses 17 to 26, he gives this information. In a nutshell, verses 13 to 16 explain that one who knows that all bodily activities are automatically carried out by the modes of material nature, once those activities are sanctioned by Supersoul, that person attains enlightenment through such knowledge. It's very powerful. The effect of this knowledge is very powerful, because anybody with any brain and a little piety will then understand the best thing is to surrender to Supersoul. If it's by his mercy that everything is sanctioned, everything actually is activated, then it's nicer if I fall in line with him. Then life will be very smooth and very peaceful. This little subsection, verses 13 to 26, is actually an expansion of one of your key memory verses, verse 3:27. There, Krishna says, the spirit soul, bewildered by the influence of false ego, thinks himself the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by the three modes of nature. So this is the nature of the conditioned soul. He thinks he's the doer. He doesn't even recognize or know super soul or the three modes. So here, in this small subsection, Krishna is expanding on this verse, verse 3:27, explaining actually what is the reality. In his purport to verse 13, Srila Prabhupada really stresses that although we are presently conditioned, we can step beyond that conditioning. And this knowledge is a very potent first step to doing that. I'd like to read the verse as well as what Srila Prabhupada has to say. So we're looking at verse 13 of chapter 5. Krishna says, when the embodied living being controls his nature and mentally renounces all actions, he resides happily in the city of nine gates, the material body, neither working nor causing work to be done. Now, perhaps we can have a look first at what Krishna means by the city of nine gates. If you have a look at this graphic here, we can understand that the two eyes, the two ears, the mouth, the nose, the genitals and the anus, these are the nine gates. Okay? Is that clear? So you can see that there are red lines and blue lines on this side of the figure, and there are yellow lines on the other side. Anyone have any idea what that means? Yeah. Great. So red and blue, we're talking the lower modes. Where does it go? Degradation and misery. But what Krishna is talking in this verse now is that one who controls his nature. This is not talking our natural, constitutional nature. This is talking our conditioned nature. This is actually separate from us. Our conditioned nature is not us. It's separate from us. It's the subtle body, which is material energy. It's not us. So Krishna is saying, realize, this nature is not you. It's separate from you. You're actually superior to it if you have knowledge. You can control it. And when you do control it, then you can live happily in the city of nine gates and you can elevate. Okay? To have control of your nature obviously means at least goodness. And if there is at least goodness, then we're talking elevation and happiness in Krishna consciousness. I'd like to read a few things from Prabhupada's purport. We'll start from the beginning. The embodied soul lives in the city of nine gates. The activities of the body, or the figurative city of body, are conducted automatically by its particular modes of nature. The soul, although subjecting himself to the conditions of the body, can be beyond those conditions, if he so desires. Remember that the only thing that the soul can do independently is desire. So Krishna is not saying anything else but that here. He's saying, if you want to step beyond your conditioned nature, you can do it if you desire to do it. Owing only to forgetfulness of his superior nature, he identifies with the material body and therefore suffers. By Krishna consciousness, he can revive his real position and thus come out of his embodiment. Therefore, when one takes to Krishna consciousness, one at once becomes completely aloof from bodily activities. In such a controlled life, in which his deliberations are changed, he lives happily within the city of nine gates. So, interesting that Prabhupada says here that his deliberations are changed. Isn't it? It's a very interesting point that Prabhupada is making. So, I'd like to read a little bit more about that from a lecture that Prabhupada gave in New York City in 66. This really gives the idea that we can be in control of our lives and our destiny if we are Krishna conscious, if we are working in communion with Krishna. Prabhupada says in this lecture, which is a lecture on verses 7 to 14, whatever he does, he has decided, manasa, by the mind. Determination comes into the mind. Therefore, his determination is manasa aste sukham vashi. He has decided to work only for Krishna consciousness. Therefore, his happiness is under his control, his own control. He hasn't got to seek happiness externally. The happiness is controlled by him. Just like a rich man, he is sitting in his room and everything is going on. Similarly, the soul who is in pure consciousness, Krishna consciousness, he is aloof from this body and everything is going on by Krishna consciousness. This is very deep. The starting point for us is to approach... Actually, we got some idea of this in the first chapter, where Arjuna was constantly calling Krishna, Hrishikesh. Four or five times in chapter one, he calls Krishna, Hrishikesh. He's a pure devotee, he's a Nitya Siddha. He can feel himself becoming bewildered. What is his response? Hrishikesh. He's calling out to Krishna. So if we reflect back now, on what he did there, we can understand this is a very important lesson for us. If we want to control our senses and we want to control our nature, as Krishna is suggesting here, we can't do that by our own strength. We are so, so tiny. And not only are we tiny, but we're covered tiny. So So our position is very weak. But remember that story of the small sparrow? The ocean stole her eggs. Huh? What did she do? With her tiny little, thank you, Satyavati. With her tiny little beak, she determined, I will get my eggs back. I will empty this ocean. He won't give them back to me. I've asked him, and so I will get them back by my own determination. So with a tiny little beak, she was taking out the water from the ocean, thinking, I will get my eggs. Everybody was laughing. But her determination, her endeavor, attracted the mercy of a Sudha Bhakta, Garudaji. And Garuda is a big bird and he has a big beak. He's very powerful. And he went to the ocean and he said, look, my sister, you've been not so sweet to my sister. You don't give her back her eggs, I'll empty your ocean. Okay, I'll give back the eggs. So this is a principle. This is actually a prominent principle that is discussed in Niti Shastra, that knowledge which the kings follow in working their kingdom, that we may have good fate or bad fate, depending on our previous karma, but our endeavor is important. Our endeavor is important. There may be, by some good fortune, we may be given something, but if we don't utilize it, if we don't endeavor appropriately and utilize it, what is the value of that? What is the value? No value. So endeavor is always important. Even if we are going through rough times karmically, if we are endeavoring Krishna consciously and appropriately now, that is determining our future. So either way, endeavor, appropriate endeavor is always a good idea. Verse 14 is quite an esoteric verse. Luckily, we have Prabhupada's purport to help us understand it. I'd like to read two purports, one from the Bhagavad Gita and one from a lecture he gave in 66 in New York. So first we'll have a look at Bhagavad Gita purport in the text. So we're looking at chapter 5, verse 14. Krishna says, the embodied spirit, master of the city of his body, does not create activities, nor does he induce people to act, nor does he create the fruits of action. All this is enacted by the modes of nature, material nature. So Prabhupada really makes very clear what Krishna is actually meaning here. We'll start from about the fourth line down of the purport. Somehow, the spirit, the superior nature, the living entity, has been in contact with material nature since time immemorial. The temporary body, or material dwelling place, which he attains, is the cause of varieties of activities and their resultant reactions. Living in such a conditional atmosphere, one suffers the results of the activities of the body by identifying himself in ignorance with the body. It is ignorance acquired from time immemorial that is the cause of bodily suffering and distress. As soon as a living entity becomes aloof from the activities of the body, he becomes free from the reactions as well. As long as he is in the city of the body, he appears to be the master of it, but actually he is neither its proprietor nor controller of its actions and reactions. He is simply in the midst of the material ocean, struggling for existence. The waves of the ocean are tossing him, and he has no control over them. His best solution is to get out of the water by transcendental Krishna consciousness. That alone will save him from all turmoil. And then in 66, Srila Prabhupada said something quite interesting. Actually, Prabhupada has a way of bringing everything down to conclusions, you know, very conclusive statements. No ifs or buts, just the way it is. And he's certainly doing that in this statement. If you act for Krishna, then you are all right. But if you are acting for your sense gratification, you'll be entangled by the resultant action. So Krishna is so kind that if you want to do something, first of all he says no. Just like a thief, he is praying to God, "My dear Lord, give me some opportunity so that I can steal that thing." Krishna first of all says, "No, no, don't do it." But the thief insists. Then Krishna says, "All right, do it." But as soon as you do it, you become entangled. Why are you doing against the will of Krishna? That is your entanglement. Krishna says, "Don't do this." Why you are doing it? So Krishna is giving you facility to steal others' property, but you become entangled. That is not Krishna's responsibility, your responsibility. Suppose a high court judge gives sanction that this man should be condemned to death. He should be hanged. Does it mean the high court judge is your enemy and he is hanging you? He has nothing to do to become your enemy or your friend. You have committed a situation and you need to be hung. He is giving order, be hanged. That's all. So your business is to surrender to Krishna and act according to his instruction. Then you'll be happy. Otherwise not. Very straightforward. In verse 15, Krishna makes it very, very clear that he is definitely not responsible for what happens in the life of a conditioned soul. Sometimes we think, well, Super Soul is the sanctioner, so he's responsible. No, somebody else is responsible, not me. Anybody else, but not me. But Krishna says, no, I'm not responsible. And Srila Prabhupada explains exactly why he's not responsible in his purport to verse 15. Let's have a look at it. We'll start about four lines down in the purport to 15. Krishna does not create a particular situation for every living entity, but the living entity, bewildered by ignorance, desires to be put into certain conditions of life, and thereby his chain of action and reaction begins. We have a conception, quite often a misconception, of what will be good for us, what will bring us happiness, and we plan. We desire to be put into a certain condition of life, isn't it? So Krishna facilitates that. But the reaction that comes is ours. A living entity is by superior nature full of knowledge. Nevertheless, he is prone to be influenced by ignorance due to his limited power. The Lord is omnipotent, but the living entity is not. The Lord is Vibhu, or omniscient, but the living entity is Anu, or atomic. Because he is a living soul, he has the capacity to desire by his free will. Such desire is fulfilled only by the omnipotent Lord. And so, when the living entity is bewildered in his desires, the Lord allows him to fulfill those desires. But the Lord is never responsible for the actions and reactions of the particular situation which may be desired. Being in a bewildered condition, therefore, the embodied soul identifies himself with a circumstantial material body and becomes subjected to the temporary misery and happiness of life. The Lord is a constant companion of the living entity as Paramatma or Supersoul, and therefore he can understand the desires of the individual soul, as one can smell the flavor of a flower by being near it. Desire is a subtle form of conditioning for the living entity. This is a very key sentence. Desire is a subtle form of conditioning for the living entity. This is the starting point. How we desire will determine not only our subtle body, our gross body, our next birth, our next field of activity, everything. So very important to learn how to desire appropriately. The Lord fulfills his desire as he deserves. Man proposes and God disposes. The individual is not therefore omnipotent in fulfilling his desires. The Lord, however, can fulfill all desires, and the Lord, being neutral to everyone, does not interfere with the desires of the minute independent living entities. However, when one desires Krishna, the Lord takes special care and encourages one to desire in such a way that one can attain to him and be eternally happy. This is such a sweet sentence, that if we just desire Krishna, then Krishna in his kindness, he will take special care of that desire, and he will encourage us in that desire in such a way that we can attain him. Isn't that wonderful? Just by us desiring, Krishna will do the rest. He'll even shape our desires. Pretty amazing. Prepared to do so much for us. So Srila Prabhupada explains this matter further in a Bhagavad Gita lecture he gave in London in 71. This looks at another angle of vision. We get the idea from what Prabhupada is saying here that the living entity is the doer, but he is the subtle doer, and that's what counts. He desires. He doesn't do anything else. He can't sanction his desire. He can't carry out his desire. It's a super soul that sanctions, the three modes that carry it out. But because he desires, he is considered a doer. Interesting point. So Prabhupada says in London in 71, desire is yours, but sanction is God's. Just like you want to do some business, you must take sanction from the government. You take license. You cannot do out of your own will. Similarly, you can desire and propose, God, I want to do this, and God will sanction. So those who are not Krishna conscious, they want. I want this, I want this, I want this, I want this. Krishna says, all right, take this. But Krishna says that you give up all this nonsense. That's what Krishna says. Not that we take. Krishna says, Savadamam paritya jamamikam sharanam prati. Simply take me, but that we do not want to do. Krishna says that the best thing is that you simply take to Krishna. But Krishna gives you the opportunity, the liberty, that whatever you do, whatever you like, that you can do. It is your choice. Just like father and grown-up son. He says, my dear boy, you do like this. That is my opinion. But when the son says, no, I shall do like this. All right, you do whatever you like. But without father's sanction, as a son cannot do anything, similarly, without Krishna's sanction, you cannot do anything. But the proposal is yours. Therefore, this maxim, man proposes, God disposes. So God is not responsible for your work. If you are acting according to the order of God, then he's responsible. And if you act against the will of God, then you are responsible. Interesting point. If you're acting in Krishna consciousness, Krishna is responsible. If you're following his order, he is responsible. He takes responsibility. But if you're not, it's your responsibility. This is a real responsibility for learning. So, in verse 16, Krishna tells us the best way out of this madness is to become enlightened in transcendental knowledge. And Srila Prabhupada, in his purport, he tells us the simplest and safest way to attain that knowledge. 2 points from the verse 16 purport that I'd like to share with you that I found very instructive. First point is about 10, 15, about 18 lines into the purport. Real knowledge can be obtained from a person who is in perfect Krishna consciousness. Therefore, one has to seek out such a bona fide spiritual master and, under him, learn what Krishna consciousness is. For Krishna consciousness will certainly drive away all nisyans, as the sun drives away darkness. So Prabhupada is stressing here the importance of being under guidance in our attempts to be Krishna conscious. We have a very stilted idea at this point in time of what such guidance means. Many times we find that devotees are complaining because guru is not accessible, sannyasi is not accessible. But there are so many advanced devotees in the community who, if we approach, would more than likely give us some help, give us some assistance. So if we want the association of advanced devotees, then we should be praying for it. We should be praying for it. Then Krishna will reveal who can help us. This is very powerful. From my experience, this is a very powerful way to get senior association, regardless of your external situation. Second point, I'm sorry, it's about 18 lines down into the 18. About roughly, I'm talking, down into the purport to 16. It began, real knowledge can be obtained from a person who is in perfect Krishna consciousness. Have you found it? Yeah? Okay. Excuse me? Can't find? I think you have this right down. Yeah. Real knowledge. Okay, you have it now? Then if we look over the page at the end of what we've just read, about four lines down, Prabhupada continues, that the soul can know everything well if he cares to take shelter of the perfect, bona fide, Krishna-conscious spiritual master. One can know God and one's relationship with God only when one actually meets a representative of God. A representative of God never claims that he is God, although he has paid all the respect ordinarily paid to God because he has knowledge of God. So this is we have many, many assistants that weren't there before the appearance of Mahaprabhu. Here Prabhupada is saying by taking shelter in this way and gaining such knowledge, then it's just like the appearance of a rising sun. In the night, we can't see ourselves, we can't see anything, as we can see from this graphic. But when the sun rises, everything is revealed. We can see everything quite clearly. Isn't it? So in Kali Yuga, we have the special benediction of the holy name. And as Haridas Thakur explains in Harinam Chintamani, the sun of the holy name arises within our heart. And then we can see very clearly. We not only have the holy name, we have Srimad Bhagavatam, we have Bhagavad Gita, we have so many sources of support in Kali Yuga. Very, very fortunate. A summary of 13 to 16 is very expertly given by way of analogy or an example in Surrender Unto Me. I'd like to share it with you. It's very, very powerful. It's on page 117 for those who'd like to read it once again later. It's very powerful. I think it was inspired by the lecture where Prabhupada was talking about the son and the father, and how the son gives the sanction for the son, the father gives the sanction for the father to the son to do something. How the living entity is in the tight grip of material nature as the doer can be compared to the attempt of a small boy to lift a weight that he has just seen his father lift. The boy first desires to lift the weight. First desires. Then he tries. He cannot possibly succeed. But his father sees his small son's desire, stands above him, and out of affection, he actually does the lifting. The father actually does the lifting. Thus the father has actually lifted the weight, but he cannot be considered the only lifter, because the child is also trying. Unless the desire had been expressed and the attempt made by the child, the father never would have helped and the weight would not have been lifted. The living entity should not, like the child, become bewildered by false ego and pride and consider himself the doer of activities, because in all cases he actually has no independent ability to act. That does not mean, however, that the living entity can avoid the responsibility of having performed the activity, because it is he who expressed the desire, and he who made the attempt to fulfill it, and he who tries to enjoy the fruit of the activity. Very interesting, very visual, very strong. So you can take this into your heart and just remember, when you're trying to do something, somebody's behind you popping out. It's Krishna. If we can catch this knowledge, our life can be transformed very, very quickly, because it's a key principle of being Krishna conscious. I've tried to make it very, very simple for you by giving a graphic on the board. If you have a look at this, we have three doers. It's explained by the Acharyas. So we have the conditioned soul. He independently desires, and Krishna doesn't interfere. Okay? So he's the first doer, because he's desiring and he's attempting. The second doer is the super soul. He sanctions those desires that karmically deserve to be fulfilled. Remember that here we are talking the conditioned soul. In the case of a devotee, Krishna may fulfill desires that are not karmically deserved, just out of loving affection for his devotee. I'm sure most of us have experience of this. We get a lot more than what we deserve. So we have the super soul as the second doer. And then we have the third doer, the three modes. Three modes are actually under the control of Krishna. They're not an independent doer, but they facilitate the activities needed to fulfill super soul approved ideas that we have. We have the desire. If super soul sanctions it, then the three modes will act to fulfill it. Now, this is a very essential point for us as devotees to understand. Sometimes we get a little bewildered. We have desires that are not so productive for our Krishna consciousness, but we're convinced they are. And things start to happen. And we say, just see, Krishna, you know, Krishna's on side. Krishna really likes what I'm doing. It's wonderful. I'm fulfilling Krishna's desire, actually. But it pays to check. It pays to check our desire, check our motivation, because this is actually how things work for the conditioned soul. Things may be happening, but why is it happening? Because it's Krishna conscious and it's what Krishna wants, or is it just this in action? That's why we were reading yesterday the importance of being a thoughtful person. If we want to attain the goal, we have to be thoughtful. We have to be introspective. Okay, I want to do this. Let's have a look at why I want to do this. Let's look ahead and see what are the advantages of doing this. What are the disadvantages of doing this? This is all part of the training of a king. It's all part of Nidhi Shastra. Projecting. Is this going to be a good idea or a bad idea? So we have to be introspective. Otherwise, we may be thinking that we've got it all under control, we're under Krishna's care. We may be thinking like that, but it's just the three modes having a good time. Having a good time with us. So we'll start the second section now, which is like a follow-on from this. Verse 17 is a principal verse which is elaborated in verses 18 to 21. Here, in verse 17, Krishna tells us that when one's intelligence, mind, and faith are fixed in Krishna, Only then can we see and understand things as they are, and be naturally and spontaneously aloof from dualities of the material world. The essence of what is being said here is very, very clearly explained in Srimad Bhagavatam. In Canto 4, Chapter 7, verse 53. The verse reads, "A person with average intelligence does not think that the head and other parts of the body are separate. Similarly, my devotee does not differentiate Vishnu, the all-pervading personality of Godhead, from anything or any living entity." Everything, there's nothing outside of Krishna consciousness. Everything is part and parcel of Krishna. So this is what he is saying here. Then in purport, Prabhupada makes a very beautiful statement. Whenever there is a... I was inspired to speak this after Abhidhut Priya's question yesterday. It's very beautiful what Prabhupada says here. "Whenever there is a disease in any part of the body, the whole body takes care of the ailing part. Similarly, our devotee's oneness is manifest in his compassion for all conditioned souls. Bhagavad Gita 5.18 said that those who are learned see everyone's conditional life equally. Devotees are compassionate to every conditioned soul. Because devotees are learned and know that every living entity is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, they preach Krishna consciousness to everyone so that everyone can be happy. If a particular part of the body is diseased, the whole attention of the body goes to that part. Similarly, devotees care for any person who is forgetful of Krishna and therefore immaterial consciousness. The equal vision of the devotee is that he wants to get all living entities back home, back to Godhead." So in terms of what we were discussing yesterday, we can understand that the body we're concerned about is Prabhupada's body, ISKCON, the devotees within ISKCON who are suffering for various reasons. This is from Bhagavatam 4.7.53. Okay, you alright, Tosti? You okay? You have pain? Maybe Satyavati should do some work on that. Maybe you can do a little Reiki. So here we're looking at this is what Prabhupada is saying here was quite some years ago when he wrote Bhagavatam, but we can analyze it and see it in perspective of the needs within the society also. Of course it still applies to everybody suffering on the planet, but we can see it specifically in relation to what's happening in ISKCON. That attention should be given to those devotees who are feeling weakened by their experience, isn't it? They should be given special support. It should be seen as a main thrust of our preaching at this point in time. It's just a personal opinion. Others may like to add something a little later. In verses 22 to 23, Krishna explains very clearly why material sense gratification is foolish. Why material sense gratification is foolish. So, let's have a look at what Krishna says and what Prabhupada says. So we're looking at verse 23 and 22, chapter 5. So Krishna says, "An intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery which are due to contact with the material senses. O son of Kunti, such pleasures have a beginning and an end, and so the wise man does not delight in them." Prabhupada, in the beginning of his purport, says, "Material sense pleasures are due to the contact with the material senses, which are all temporary because the body itself is temporary. A liberated soul is not interested in anything which is temporary." And then in conclusion to this purport, Prabhupada says, "The more one is addicted to material pleasures, the more he is entrapped by material miseries." Now, it's pretty important, if we want to have this as a working principle in our Krishna consciousness, to understand how that works. In our original constitutional position, we have senses. We have transcendental senses. Now, at this point in time, because of our desire to enjoy separately from Krishna, all of those senses are covered. It's like I put a blanket over Bettina. Okay? So underneath the blanket, there's a constitutionally wonderful person. But this blanket is sort of obstructing what she can do and how I can relate with her. So what's happening is that each time that we try and engage the senses independently of Krishna consciousness, we're putting on another blanket and another blanket and another blanket. We're becoming more and more covered. We're removing ourselves more and more from loving relationship with Krishna. We're crippling ourselves more and more. This is actually what we're doing. And this is why Prabhupada is saying here, the more one is addicted to material pleasures, the more he's entrapped by material miseries. Because the very act of the enjoyment of engaging the senses separately from Krishna's activities, another blanket, another blanket. Very difficult to eat sweet rice through a blanket. Isn't it? Very hard to enjoy. So you can just imagine. We are covered like this. The coverings are very subtle. So we think, I'm independent. I can do what I like with my hand. I can do what I like with my eyes. But actually, it's not the case. They are covered. The senses we have at the moment are not the senses of the soul. They're the senses that have come when the subtle body took us into the next body, the one we've got now. There's a group of senses that matched our desires and the reactions that are going to come to us in this lifetime, all in one package. We came with a package. It's got nothing to do with us. Something to think about. So then in verse 23, Krishna says, before giving up this present body, if one is able to tolerate the urges of the material senses and check the force of desire and anger, he is well situated and is happy in this world. Prabhupada says in Purport, if one wants to make steady progress on the path of self-realization, he must try to control the forces of the material senses. Notice here he's saying material senses. So that means we have an alternative. We can engage the senses spiritually. There are the forces of talk, forces of anger, forces of mind, forces of the stomach, forces of the genitals, and forces of the tongue. One who is able to control the forces of all these different senses and the mind is called Goswami or Swamini. Or Swami, sorry. Such Goswamis live strictly controlled lives and forego altogether the forces of the senses. Material desires, when unsatiated, generate anger, and thus the mind, eyes, and chest become agitated. Therefore, one must practice to control them before one gives up this material body. One who can do this is understood to be self-realized and is thus happy in the state of self-realization. It is the duty of the transcendentalist to try strenuously to control desire and anger. Now, because of our previous conditioning, we may have a certain conception of what it means to try strenuously to control desire and anger. But don't forget what we said yesterday about the child holding the rock. It's not that we are trying, you know, really hard to let go of the rock. That's not the point. This is not the main point. The main point is that we want to free our hands so we can take a rusk bullet. Okay? So what does that mean in practical terms, day-to-day life as a devotee? Strenuously try to be Krishna conscious. We have the teachings of Rupa Goswami, nectar of devotion, nectar of instruction, Srimad Bhagavad Gita. We can follow those, strenuously try to follow what Prabhupada and the previous acharyas have given. And then we can strenuously pray to Krishna. How can I control my senses? I'm doing what I can. I'm leaving the rest to you. Protect me. This is the most powerful, one of the most powerful prayers we can offer when we sing the Sringade prayers in the morning. We're not really interested, those of us who've been around a long time, we're not really interested in being protected from car accidents and, you know, being ripped off by the Sabjiwala. We're not really interested in these kind of things. You know? We're interested in protection from lust, anger, greed, illusion, madness, envy. We're interested in protection from offense. I don't want to commit offense. I don't want to be implicated in an offense. If we can hone in our desiring and prayers at that time, the Nrisingadev, especially Prahlad Nrisinga. Prahlad Nrisingadev is very, very powerful. When we approach Nrisingadev as Prahlad Nrisingadev, because of the compassion of Prahlad, Nrisingadev will hear us. We always approach the deity through the servant of the deity, to the devotee of the deity. Then the prayer will be, we will get so much reciprocation. Just a thought on that. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he explains that one who has got a little bit of a taste for Krishna consciousness, he can gradually give up material engagement. It's just a matter of getting a taste. Just a matter of getting a taste. He gives the comparison that someone who's used to eating sweetmeats is not going to go and eat mud. Is he? Somebody, your mother's giving you maha sweets every day. You're going to go and say, I don't want the sweets, and I'm going to go and eat mud. Of course, unless it's mud sweets made from Ramananda Ghat or something like that. You know, but we're talking ordinary mud. So, you know, it's a simple thing. Once we can just follow the principles to the best of our ability, depend on Krishna for the rest, taste the sweetness of that reciprocation, be inspired to try harder, taste the reciprocation of that. Huh? It just naturally snowballs in the full Krishna consciousness. The only thing you have to be very careful of is an offense. Offense is the one that can melt the snowball. Yeah, I wanted to read you something from a New York lecture by Prabhupada. Just a short point, and I've said it many times, it's always more powerful when Prabhupada says it, just to try and maybe hammer in the lesson a little bit for ourselves, that material sense gratification equals misery. If we see that that's the equation and we're intelligent, we'll try and do things a bit differently. So Prabhupada, he says something very simple. Any enjoyment which is derived out of touch of the senses, we should know that that is meant for our miserable life. Dukkha yonayaha means that in future I will have to suffer for that. Therefore, sense control is very essential. The happiness derived, material happiness derived out of touch of senses, oh, it is clearly stated here that dukkha yonayaha, they are the mother of all miseries. Mother of all miseries. That whole sentence? Yeah. The happiness derived, material happiness derived out of the touch of senses, oh, it is clearly stated here, the dukkha yonayaha, they are the mother of all miseries. So if we can just have as a working equation, material sense gratification equals misery. And use it like a sloka. You know how slokas come to you when you find yourself in compromised positions sometimes? You know, the things you read in Prabhupada's books or slokas, you find yourself in a position that's not so good for your Krishna consciousness, that'll come to mind. If you put this into your mental framework as one such shloka, material sense gratification equals misery. Huh? It may be helpful. In verses 24 to 26, we see a progression of success outlined by Krishna. In verse 24, Krishna says that one whose happiness and aim is inward will ultimately attain the Supreme. It'll take time, but he will attain the Supreme. 25, we can see here that we're talking more preaching mode. There's an understanding that other people are on the planet, not just me and Krishna. Krishna says, those beyond the duality arising from doubts, whose minds are engaged within, but are always busy working for the welfare of others, free from all sin, will attain the Supreme. And then he says in conclusion, free from material anger and desire, self-realized, self-disciplined, and constantly striving for perfection, such a person is assured of attaining the Supreme in the very near future. So if we have a desire to attain Krishna in the very near future, understanding the very near future may mean the rest of this lifetime. That's not a long time, given how long we've been around. But if we want to attain Krishna in the very near future, we don't want to do it all again, then we should take careful note of this verse. We should pray to Prabhupada, pray to the Acharyas for these qualities. Freedom from material anger, desire. Pray for self-realization. Pray for self-discipline. Because the self can't act independently from the super self. That's what we learned earlier in today's class. So pray to Krishna. I want to be self-realized. Help me. I want to be self-disciplined. Help me. And constantly striving. When we start to walk, we fall. We get up, we try again. You remember when you first started to learn how to ride a bicycle? How many of you learned to ride a bicycle? Yeah, most of us. You remember you fell, picked the thing up, tried again, isn't it? Krishna consciousness is no different. We have to be constantly striving for perfection. One thing to ride a bicycle, another thing to become Krishna conscious, but the process is the same. Keep trying, have a system to do it. Here we're talking a system of following Prabhupada and the previous acharyas. We had somebody who told us how to ride a bike too, isn't it? Someone said, do like this, put the pedal up this way. If you put it down here, you won't have enough push to get on momentum. We had a guru to learn how to ride the bike. We followed the instruction, it worked. Same thing here. What do you think, Sushma? Sound like a good idea? In verse 25, Krishna mentions working for the welfare of all living beings. In conclusion to today's verses, I'd like to read you something very, very special and very, very sweet in relation to this. It's spoken by Srila Prabhupada in Los Angeles in 69. It's so wonderful, actually. Only Prabhupada could say something like this. Whose mind is engaged within? Who is always busy working for the welfare of all sentient beings? This chanting of Hare Krishna, it is welfare work for all sentient beings, even the worms, the microbes, the cockroaches. So many living entities are within this room. By hearing this vibration of Hare Krishna mantra, they will be getting also the result. That is described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. When Lord Chaitanya questioned Haridas Thakur about the efficacy of chanting, how he described, you will find it in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. It is a fact. If you are chanting within the room, and if you find nobody is coming to participate in the kirtan, don't be disappointed. There are many germs, worms, cockroaches within this room, and they are being benefited. They are being benefited. You cannot find any place without living entities. Just you find one hole, you will see hundreds of ants are coming out. So living entities are in the air, in the water, in the holes, everywhere. And this vibration, everyone, every living entity, every entity has got his own ear. So this sound is so powerful because it is spiritual that it will act even on the ants and the trees and the birds and the bees, what to speak of the human being. It is a so nice thing. So those who are chanting, one who is always busy working, what is the busyness of these Krishna conscious students? They are busy in chanting Hare Krishna, in distributing knowledge in Krishna consciousness. Therefore, they are doing the best welfare work in the world. Other welfare work will be finished as soon as the body is finished, but these welfare activities will not be finished. If one hears one day, 1 minute, 1 second, this vibration of chanting, it will act someday. Therefore, this is the best welfare activity in the human society. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki! It's so sweet. Okay. Any questions on what I've said this morning? Rukmavari, you heard something?
He has something to do with
what's going on. Yeah. We petition the super soul that he doesn't listen to the foolish desires that we think are Krishna conscious but actually aren't. It's nice to remember, other people may have ideas on this as well, I'll just say a little bit. It's nice to remember what we looked at yesterday as a short question and answer sample, that the secondary aspect, or second stage of realization of the absolute truth is super soul. But higher than him is Bhagavan, Krishna. So in his mercy, Bhagavan has come in the form of the deity. He's there. So we can go to him. And we can present. I do this all the time. It's just that become a habit. I say, well, I'm thinking about doing this. What do you think? Simple. So the deity is there. His position is actually higher than super soul. Super soul will take direction from Bhagavan. Right? Bhagavan, as we were reading in Prabhupada's lecture notes here, that, it was in the purport, that Krishna takes special care when you decide you want to know him, you want to love him. So part of that taken care is that if you're praying to your Istadev, to the deity you've taken as your heart and soul, you're saying, I want to do this. What do you think? Is it for my best Krishna conscious interests? Have you got a better idea? You know? And usually you'll get a sign somehow or another of what's happening. And even if you don't, within your heart, you get a feeling that, actually, I think I'd rather do something else. Or, actually, this is a really good idea. I'm really convinced that this is the right thing to do. Something will gel there. So one interesting thing that we could do is just take it to the higher aspect of the Absolute Truth, the personality of the Absolute Truth, and discuss it with him. Anybody else got any suggestions for how we can deal with this? Yeah. Yeah, this is also a very good point. We can confirm it with Guru, we can confirm it with Sadhu, we can confirm it with Shastra. Yeah?
I'm thinking in terms of my waking consciousness.
Uh-huh.
Since we've been studying, I've
Available. He's a very good friend. He's a very good friend, especially if you're a preacher. And I don't know, I was practicing Astanga Yoga before I came to ISKCON. So I have a very strong feeling of a relationship with him. At a certain stage of realization, that is true. But the Lord's not going to sit in a dirty heart. So that's why we're so fortunate to have Naam. And we're so unfortunate if we don't listen when we chant. Because actually, being in a sleeping condition, very covered condition, we're not in any fit state to clean our own heart. So by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's wonderful arrangement, the holy name is Krishna. So we take Naam, we vibrate the name of Naam, and if we're hearing, Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about this in Harinam Chintamani, if we're hearing, the ear is open, the door of the ear is open, then that vibration that we're chanting will enter the ear and go into the heart. And Naam within the heart, he will start cleaning. It's actually Naam who cleans, not us. That's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur tells us that if we are chanting and we are not hearing our chanting, then we're wasting our time. It's just like you get in a boat and you row all night. You're so exhausted. Huh? But the anchor's down. You didn't get anywhere. You're exhausted. You didn't get anywhere. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains to us that, you know, we have to hear. When we're talking the nine processes of devotional service, it's Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam. Shravanam. So if we're just fine, but where are you going to go? Maybe the higher planets. Come back after the Sankirtan mission's finished. Cockroaches this big, it's going to be real fun. Yeah. If we actually realize how dependent we are on Krishna, we're an illusion at the moment. We think we can do things ourselves. But one sign that I observe in those who are highly evolved spiritually is that they are aware of their dependence and they are constantly praying. They're always praying. Anything they have to do, the first thing they do is they go to their deities and pray. Or they take out their bead bag and start chanting. Anything that comes up. Not, I've got a solution, I can handle it. No, I can't handle this without Krishna. Here's my bead bag, go and see the deity. Like that, that's a nice point. Then we, yeah, that's true. Actually, if we want to hear, then we have to be very mindful of the offenses to Nam. Because Nam is a person, and he can decide whether he's going to have a relationship with you or not. So if you're offensive towards him, especially if you're offensive towards his devotees, it may not happen that he cleans the heart. He may put you into some difficulty that will humble you and make you aware that, you know, I'm not who I thought I was. And then when we become a little humble and open to what the devotees have to share with us, become less offensive, then the relationship can start. Ananda is holding up the window. This is an essential aspect. Did you everyone understand the question? It's at the end of the pulpit of 17. A Krishna conscious person can thoroughly understand that there is duality, simultaneous identity and individuality in Krishna. And equipped with such transcendental knowledge, one can make steady progress on the path of liberation. So this Chinchabeda Beda aspect of our philosophy is basic to our understanding of how things work. So here, it's a particular duality that is being talked about by Prabhupada, simultaneous identity and individuality. Now, Krishna is not only Krishna Bhagavan, but Krishna also his parts and parcels. They also have individuality. They also have identity, but they are separate, they are different from Krishna. So we're looking at the whole picture here. It's not that just by knowing Krishna you can become Krishna conscious. You have to know Krishna and his energies. No, here we're talking about, when we talk about Krishna, there are different aspects of his individuality. There's us, there's him. There's the internal energy and all the associates within that. So we're looking at it, you know, there are a number of... It's a very subtle point that you've raised, but that's my understanding. Does anyone have a different understanding on that? Yeah, that also, that's a nice point. Panchatattva, the five aspects, five features of the Absolute Truth. That's a nice way to look at it also, thank you. Well, there's empowerment when it comes as an instruction, but as long as it's under the shelter of the process given by Prabhupada and the Acharyas, there's no problem. It's not like that, you know, every 5 minutes you have to run to a guru and check whether what you did is, you know, properly Krishna conscious. You know, we do have a framework to work with. We have the 64 angas given in Nectar of Devotion. We have the principles of behavior given in Nectar of Instruction. We have the Sabhasha, you know, a very fundamental principle given in Isho. We have all the instructions of Bhagavad Gita. So if we're working within that framework, you know, we're pretty safe. No harm in doing what you like to do for Krishna. Yeah, it will lead to purification. Because you do what you like to do well. So the fact that you're just trying to give your best will mean purification, and then you'll have some realization of what Krishna wants. It's very interesting, actually. Bhaktisiddhanta speaks about this. I just thought of it in his teachings of Chaitanya. I think it's in the second part where he talks about when you get the mercy of the Dham, then you can develop your relationship with Nam. And then by the mercy of Nam, you can come to understand Krishna Kam, Krishna's desire. So the purpose of name, chanting the holy name, is to actually come to the understanding of what Krishna wants me to do. Some of us may have the good fortune to be given life mission by Guru. But it can come directly just through chanting the holy name. That it will come as a very strong... I've met many Prabhupada disciples, so I have a very clear mission in life. And it's come through the potency of the chanting. That they understand, this is what Krishna wants of me. Like that. Okay, I really want to stop here, if that's okay, because we only have 10 minutes to do work on our questions, writing practice. One thing that I noticed about yesterday, it was enlivening to see it, but also we need to be a little careful of it, is that we spend a lot of time talking about the answers. That's not such a bad thing, but don't forget in working in your groups to get your written answer. And you have a person in your group that's specifically helping you with your English. So in particular, check the written answer. Because this section of our class, which we're giving, trying to give 20 minutes a day to, is to prepare for the written section of our work. Okay? So when you get together, put the focus on putting it on paper, seeing how it looks on paper, whether it's clear, whether it makes sense, it's the right answer, all that sort of thing. Is that okay? We won't have time to do the fill-in unless people... Do you want to do it tomorrow? We'll do it tomorrow, the chapter 5 fill-in?
Okay.
Is it okay? Okay. Otherwise we lose too much time today. So today I want you to have a look at a couple of questions. We have time. One is three differences between the soul and Paramatma. List three differences between the soul and Paramatma, and list the six transformations of the material body. Okay? Transformations, six changes of the material body. Six changes that happen in life. Okay? If you get time, you can also try and answer what is transmigration. If you get time. First two questions are pretty simple.
What is transmigration?
That's the third one, if you get time. If you don't, we can do it tomorrow. Second one was, what are the six transformations of the material body, or the six changes that the body goes through? So if you can move into your groups and really get into solid work straight away.